All right, let's get started. This is lesson number 14, part 3. The book is Esther that we're looking at this morning. We're going to go through the entire book of Esther. All right, the first year I want you to write down and take notes. Write this year down. You must memorize this year. 1440 B.C., what happens?
Moses takes the law on Mount Sinai.
That's right. Approximately 1,000 years before Christ, who becomes the first king of Israel?
Saul.
For 120 years, three kings reigned for a total of 120 years. Those kings are?
Saul, David, and Solomon.
That's right. Saul, David, and Solomon. For a total of 400 years, there are a series of good and bad kings that rule. For 400 years. Is Judah taken into captivity? How many years is Judah?
70.
All right, so let's go to our dry erase board. Let's jot down some dates. 1440 B.C., Moses received the law. Moses received the law where?
Mount Sinai.
Say it again, please.
Mount Sinai.
1440 B.C. 40 years of wandering in the what?
Wilderness.
That takes us to 1400. How many years of judges? 400 years of judges. That takes us to 1,000. Make sure you're taking notes. 120 years of good kings. Saul, David, and Solomon takes us to 880. Right? Everyone tracking? 120 minus 1,000 takes us to 880. Everyone tracking?
Yes, sir.
Yes? No. Yes. All right, that leaves 280 more years of good and bad kings with a divided kingdom. 280 minus 880 takes us all the way down to 600 B.C. How many years are we in captivity?
70
years. 600 minus 70 takes us to where?
530 B.C.
Remember, we're going backwards, everyone. 516. Write down Ezra chapter 7, verse 1. The temple is rebuilt. The second temple is rebuilt. Why am I saying the second temple, students? Who built the first one?
Solomon
built the first one. This is the second temple. 1516. Second temple rebuilding complete. Ezra 7:1. Second temple rebuilding complete. Ezra 7:1. You must know these basic days.
The last one?
The last one is 1516. 516 BC. Let's go all the way back over it. About 1440 B.C., Moses received the law on Mount Sinai. 40 years of wandering around in the wilderness, and they finally get to occupy the Promised Land. For 400 years, judges ruled during the occupation of the Promised Land. Around 1,000 years before Christ, Israel gets its first king, who is?
Saul.
For 120 years, including Saul, 40, Saul, David, and Solomon all reign. The kingdom is now divided, and for 280 more years, the kings rule in a divided kingdom, northern and
southern.
Israel in the north and Judah in the
south.
Very good. Israel is the first to be defeated. Judah holds on for a little longer. Judah is defeated and goes into captivity, ladies, for how long?
70
years of captivity. Cyrus the Great rules and issues an edict that allows them to go back and reoccupy and begin rebuilding in Jerusalem. Remember that?
Yes.
The 516 date is the official date of the second temple being finished.
So 530 was the first, right?
530 was the edict to go back and start the process. It takes them a long time, Ken. They don't do it quickly. You can see 530 to 516 is how many years?
14
years, okay? Don't think in terms of month, think in terms of years. It takes a long time for this process to occur. Nehemiah is next on the timeline. Nehemiah is next on the timeline and gets permission to go back and start rebuilding the what? The walls. That's correct. The walls. Now we're looking at Esther. We're looking at the book of Esther. Open your Bibles to chapter number 1 and verse number 1. There is a Hebrew name for a king there. A-H-A-S-U-E-R-U-S. That is the Hebrew name for this king. And I always have a hard time pronouncing it. But it's Xerxes. Xerxes the first. X-E-R-X-E-S. This is a Persian king. This is a Persian king. There are lots of non-biblical literature supporting his existence. Do you understand what I mean when I say non-biblical literature?
Yes.
That supports when he ruled and his existence. That's Xerxes. Let's go above Xerxes and we have Darius. Let's go above Darius and we have Cyrus. Cyrus the what?
The Great.
Cyrus the Great. He's the one that established the kingdom, the Persian kingdom. Would you take your maps now? Look down at your maps. Look down at your maps. Do you see on your map the green? See on the map the green? The green represents the Persian Empire. The green represents the Persian Empire. Look at the size of the empire. They're pushing all the way into Europe. They're pushing down into North Africa. They've got much of the Middle East. All of, now I want you to draw your comparisons. Look at your bottom map. So they're into all of Turkey, Syria, they're into Israel, they're into Egypt, parts of Saudi Arabia, all of Iraq, all of Iran, they're into Afghanistan, they're into Pakistan, they're into Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan. See how far they go north? Look at your seas, the Aral Sea and the Aral Sea. Compare the two maps. Look at the Aral Sea in the north and look at the Aral Sea in the southern map or the bottom map. Look at the Caspian Sea in the northern, the top map, and then compare it to the bottom map. Look over to into Pakistan on your bottom map in the brown. Do you see the three river, the rivers that spawn off into three different rivers there? You can compare that to the top one, and this is how we know how far this kingdom was occurring. It's huge. It's huge. This is a giant kingdom. And Cyrus the Great has a son, Darius, who has a son, Xerxes. Okay? Xerxes is the king in the book of Esther. Xerxes is the king in the book of Esther. All right. Let me give you the other main characters in the book of Esther. Obviously, the king is a main character. Xerxes, X-E-R-X-E-S. Who else? Esther. Esther is a main character. Who else? Mordecai, M-O-R-D-E-C-A-I. Mordecai, M-O-R-D-E-C-A-I. Mordecai. Mordecai is Esther's cousin or uncle. Mordecai is Esther's cousin or uncle. So we have a king, we have Esther, we have Mordecai. The king is Persian, Esther is a Jew, Mordecai is a Jew. All right, let me give you another main character. Haman. Haman is H-A-M-A-N. H-A-M-A-N. Haman is a prime minister. Haman is a prime minister. So he works for who? He works for who?
The king.
The king. Very good. He works for the king. All right. We're going to add the king's wife. Add the king's wife. Her name is Vashti. V-A-S-H-T-I. Vashti. Queen Vashti. The queen's wife. We have a king. We have a queen. We have a prime minister. And then we have two Jews. Total of how many?
Five
characters. Everyone tracking? Five characters. All right. How would you define the word irony? If something is ironic, how would you define it? Something is ironic. How would you define it?
Weird.
What?
Weird.
Ken says weird. Star.
Completely different from like the outcome expected.
All right, completely different from the outcome you expected. Anyone else? Irony. If we say something that was very ironic, where there's irony. Anyone else? Okay. Esther, the book of Esther, the story of Esther, is characterized by irony. It's characterized by irony. I want to tell you the story, and I want to tell it to you very quickly. Tell you the story and tell it to you very quickly. All right. Look back at your map, please. Look on your map and find Susa. S-U-S-A. It's right by where it says Babylonia, just above it. You see where there, Susa, do you see it? Above the Persian Gulf. Find the Persian Gulf in your top map and move north. You'll see some rivers right there. Do you see them?
Yes.
Everyone found Susa?
Yes.
Okay. Now, draw a parallel and go down to your bottom map and you'll see that Susa would be in modern day... No, not in Iran. In Iraq. Because of where the rivers come together, it's on the western side. So Susa is in modern day Iraq. Susa is the location for the story of Esther. Susa is the location for the story of Esther. We know that from verse number 5. Shushan is the Hebrew of Susa. So we've got this constant variance going back and forth between the Hebrew language and the Persian language. Verse 5 tells us that this story takes place in Susa, the capital city of the Persian Empire, or I should say one of the capital cities of the Persian Empire. You've got your main characters. You know where we're at. All right, let me draw. Let's put us on the timeline. The best date, approximate date, is 470. 470. We get that from when King Xerxes reigned. We get that from when King Xerxes reigned. 470 B.C. So at this point, where are some Jews?
Back in Jerusalem.
That's right, back in Jerusalem. Did they all go back?
No,
they did not. Mordecai and Esther are an example of two Jews that did not go back. So we have Jews back in Jerusalem, occupying, rebuilding, getting things working. We also have Jews scattered out throughout this entire region. We have Jews in northern Africa. We have Jews in the capital city. We have Jews as far as India. We have Jews as far north as modern-day Turkey. So Jews are all over the place. God's people are relocated in Jerusalem, and God's people are also living throughout this region. All right, the story opens up with the queen refusing to attend a banquet or an event that the king has. All right, the king doesn't know what to do about this. Wifey says, I'm not going, and the king says, yes, you are. And wifey says, no, I'm not. And he says, yes, you are. And she says, no, I'm not. And she doesn't show up. Now, this is a major embarrassment to the king. He's at a banquet or an event without his wife, okay? The wise men tell him, hey, king, you can't do this. The wife has to do what the king says. It doesn't look good when a normal wife doesn't do what a husband says, but it really doesn't look good when the king's wife doesn't. What are all the women in the kingdom going to do? Are they all going to start disobeying their husbands? And so you got to get rid of your wife. Got to get rid of your wife. So the king kanks his wife. You're out of here, wifey. Now it's time. The king needs a new
wife.
Needs a new wife. All right, we've got to get the king a new wife. And the king, quite frankly, does not want short, fat, ugly women. Okay, that's just the way it is. The king has a kind of a sense that he should have beautiful women. So he asks, let me get a beautiful or a beauty contest going. And he is going to entertain women for a long time and pick the best of them. And every night, a different one is going to show up at the king's palace. And at the end of a period of time, he's going to pick the one that he liked the best. That's what you can do when you're the king. Okay? The rest of you men, well, you just have to date and hope that God will be gracious and send you somebody. And that's just the way it goes. But if you're the king, you can have anyone you want. So, who gets to be the king's wife?
Esther.
Esther does. That's right. Esther finds favor with the king. Now, what I failed to mention to you so far is that Esther is a very, very unique book of the Bible. Does anyone know why Esther is such a unique book of the Bible? Matt?
It doesn't mention God.
Yeah, there is not a single mention of God in 10 chapters. In 10 chapters of Esther, there's no mention of God. This is the only book of the 66 that we have that doesn't mention God. There's not even a mention of prayer in this book. There's a reference to supplications, fasting, but not particularly prayer to God. In fact, Martin Luther wasn't even sure this book should be in the Bible because it is so wicked. People are getting killed. People are sleeping with each other. Wives are kind of being almost compared to property as in this beauty contest thing. And in any case, we have a scenario where Esther is now the queen. All right, now let's move to Mordecai. Early in the book, Mordecai, in chapter 2, saves the king's life by overhearing a plot by somebody inside the kingdom that they want to kill the king. He brings this information to the king, not directly, but into the palace, and the king's life is saved. And verse 23 says that what Mordecai did was written in the Chronicles before the king, or the book of the Chronicles before the king. Now, in chapter 3, we get introduced to Haman, H-A-M-A-N, Haman. Haman is the prime minister. Haman is full of himself. I mean, this is one arrogant dude. There's no other way of describing it. Haman gets this promotion and gets the king's servants together and puts himself on some type of a horse or some type of a wagon or a seat of honor and moves through the town and expects everybody to bow down to him in worship of who he is. Who doesn't bow down?
Mordecai.
Mordecai does not bow down. If you don't know this story, make sure that you're paying attention, or you read it over the weekend, or you get the VeggieTales episode, or something. Okay? But you need to know this story. Mordecai refuses to bow down, and Haman is furious with his refusal to bow down. He is even more furious, Ken, because Mordecai is a Jew. All right, this brings us to this anti-Semitic. What is anti-Semitic? It's anti-Jew. Semitic is Jew, so anti-Semitic. Who is our most famous anti-Semitic person in the world?
Is it Nero?
No, quickly.
Hitler,
of course. Hitler is our most anti-Semitic person, responsible for killing 7 million Jews. So Haman is anti-Semitic. That means you hate Jews. For what reason? Just because you hate Jews. And he hates Jews. All right, so let's move on in our story. So Haman begins to plot how he's going to destroy all the Jews because of Mordecai. All the Jews. He hates Jews, and he's going to get Jews killed in the Persian Empire. Mordecai comes up with a plan whereby he wants all the Jews in the entire kingdom destroyed. Haman comes up with a plan. Mordecai finds out about the plan. Mordecai goes to Esther and expects Esther to do what?
To stop it,
to tell the king. Esther is very uncomfortable with this idea of telling the king. She is just not okay with that. She's not sure that the king knows she's a Jew. And she's not sure that the king would have married her if he knew that she was a Jew. And so she's afraid of letting the king know that she's a Jew. And Mordecai challenges her with a famous Bible verse. I'm sorry. He challenges her, and what his challenge was becomes a famous Bible verse, and it's found in Esther 4:14. And it goes something like this. How do you know, Esther, that you're not in this position as queen for such a time as this? You see it at the end of verse 14? For such a time as this. How do you know, Esther, that God hasn't orchestrated this entire thing with Vashti copying an attitude and refusing to go to the banquet, the king firing her as a wife, divorcing her? And then how do you know that when the king entertained hundreds of wives, he found you as the most beautiful? He found you. Now you're in this position as the king's wife so that you can influence him more than anybody else. How do you know, Esther, that this wasn't all God's sovereign plan so that you could save who?
Jews.
The Jews. So, in many regards, we could say Esther is a type of Christ. I know you're uncomfortable with that because Esther's a female, but what does Esther do?
Saves the Jews.
She saves the Jews. And Christ saves people from their sin. And I know we don't think that, oh, she can't be a type of Christ, but of course she can be a type of Christ because she saves people from sin or death or destruction or elimination. All right, let's go on. So, Esther develops a plan. She's going to have a banquet, and she's going to have Haman invited to the banquet. And so, Haman is plotting how he is going to kill Mordecai for his rebellion. So, what does Haman build? Anyone remember? Come on, think. What does Haman build?
Gallows.
What? Say it.
Gallows,
that's right. Very good. Huge gallows. What do we mean by gallows? Wooden platforms, elevated, and then you'd have a rope around you, then they drop the bottom out, and then you would hang to
death.
That's right. So these massive gallows are being built, and they're being built for Mordecai in particular, and then once Mordecai is killed, Haman feels like, I'll execute my plan of genocide. Genocide is the elimination of a particular people. Okay? A very anti-Semitic guy, this Haman. Just so happens that on a particular night, the king can't, anyone remember?
Sleep.
Can't sleep. That's right, he can't sleep. So he calls for somebody to read him a bedtime story, okay? But it's not Winnie the Pooh this time. It is the Chronicles of the King. The Chronicles of the King. So they're reading the narrative of the king's history to the king, all right? So he's listening to all the goodness of him. And they so happen to, on this given night, what story do we come to? Anyone remember?
Mordecai.
That's right. We come to the story of Mordecai saving the king's life because it was written in the Chronicles of the King. So the king laying in bed, can't sleep. He's got insomnia. He's got his bedtime story reader, who normally reads him Winnie the Pooh, is now reading tonight something a little bit more boring, the Chronicles of the King. And they come to this story about Mordecai. So the king says out loud, hey, what did we do for Mordecai anyway? What did we do for Mordecai anyway? And they look through the records, and what do they find?
Nothing.
Nothing. Hey, king, we haven't done anything. What do you mean we didn't do anything? How do we have a guy in the kingdom that saved the king's life, and we didn't even pin a medal on his chest? And he says, no, we haven't done anything for him. So the king says, we got to do something about this. It just so happens... That is the irony of the just so happens. There's so many it just so happens in the book of Esther. It just so happens that Haman happens to be out in the outer court, and the king says, hey, I got any wise dudes out there? And someone says, Haman's out there. Bring Haman in. Let's get some advice from Haman. So the king says, Haman, what do we do for a person who does X, Y, and Z? Now Haman, being the arrogant fool that he is, begins thinking in his mind that the king is talking about who?
Himself.
And so he decides all that he should receive. You know, my favorite restaurant is Outback, so he should get a gift certificate to Outback. And my favorite gear is Under Armour, so he should get a year subscription to all the best armor under clothes. And he starts thinking about everything for himself. And the king says, excellent, excellent. Yes, Under Armour gear and gift certificates to Outback and a new iPod for him and get him a year subscription to an iPhone and on and on. And Haman is thinking, this is great. Now, go do everything for Mordecai. And if we were there and we could have captured this with a video camera, It would have been awesome to see his face. It would have been priceless. And of course, don't pay attention to that bell. You just sit still. Remember, I'm a sovereign. And then this is my classroom, like the king of Persia. And so he gets word. Go do it. Go do it. And so you can imagine Haman now. He is exasperated because all that he had planned is now being reversed. So now they go to the banquet. Mordecai is in the king's garment and has received all this exaltation. And then the queen is now even more courageous, and she reveals the plot. She reveals the plot that Haman was seeking to destroy the Jews. And when she communicates that even she would have been destroyed. Listen, got to get the last part. The king is exasperated with the whole thing. And so the very gallows that were built for Mordecai are used to hang Haman. There's some irony right there. That he swings on the very rope that he planned for Mordecai. Mordecai is elevated to a position of authority. Esther remains the queen. And they get a decree from the king that as Jews, they get to kill all the anti-Semitic people in the kingdom. So now the Jews are going around killing all their enemies, which is really strange. Last thing, pay attention to this. The book closes with a feast. You need to write the name of this feast down. P-U-R-I-M. P-U-R-I-M. That feast is the celebration of God saving his people through Mordecai and Esther. The Jews today still celebrate that feast. One day a year, they remember God saving his people, and they have quite a party doing so. It's the Feast of Purim, P-U-R-I-M. All right, you're dismissed. What class are you going to? History with Mr. Farmer?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll go speak to him now.